Hey, it's Mike Robb. Well, as with any overnight success, there was a pretty long road between comic book and TV series for Powers. And Brian Michael Bendis and the cast are here to tell the tale on that. Plus, Nestor Carbonell talks a little more about the new season of Bates Motel and what's the deal between his character and Norma. He finally lets it out. Let's get to the point.
This is the point. The Point Radio. Get the Point Radio.
It was all the way back in the year 2000 that Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Oeming created the series Powers for Image Comics. In the last decade and a half, it's been a long, hard road to get that comic produced as now what is a regular television series. Brian Michael Bendis talks about what happened along the way.
When we were just on our second issue, Sony optioned the book back in 2000. And Mike was actually drawing the book in a security booth in a parking garage that he was working at. Like, that's where he drew the first issues of Powers. So that money got him out of the parking garage. So that was great. But when they bought it, they didn't actually know what they had yet. You know, it was much darker than I think someone over in Features thought it was. And they were all hopped up on Spider-Man, and it's not Spider-Man. So, but we had a really interesting time developing it as a feature. Frank Oz was attached to direct it for a while, and we had a wonderful time with him, and David Ray was one of the writers. It was a wonderful experience, but it clearly isn't a movie. It is a TV show. It is an ongoing procedural. It is, you know, just the nature of the way we're telling the stories matches television more than it does film. And so when they were smart enough, David Engel, our executive producer, was smart enough to go to Sony, you know, if you just move it over to television, and, you know, we could have a go at this for real, and literally FX bought it like the next day. They were completely in. And they developed for us, and we made a pilot, and it was an interesting pilot, you know, interesting enough for them to put a writer's room together. But still, there was something off, and it was a chemistry thing. Everyone involved is very talented, but it just sometimes, you know, it's something, you know. Well, in the writer's room, Charlie Houston was hired to be in the writer's room, and he wrote an episode that was fantastic. It was just, like, unbelievable. It was funny, and it was dark, and it was dangerous, and I literally emailed the president of the network, and I go, by the way, if you're looking to find Powers, that's it. And so many other people agreed that they actually ended up firing everybody else except for Charlie, and Charlie was now running the show, and it was his version that got us where we are here.
For actor Eddie Izzard, it was a letter that got him involved in the show.
It was an unusual letter. I showed it to my producing brother. It's very unusual. And it's about the dark, sort of poetic vision of the darkness and the beauty behind Wolf. So that intrigued me as an opening gambit. I sort of logged it, think, I've got to do that to pitch that to someone. It was just an unusual way of putting it in, because he's not, Wolf comes in drip feed into our season, and he's only in for one scene in the first episode. He's not in the second episode. He comes in the third, and gradually is going to get more and more involved. So he couldn't really show me a huge much more than that. So it was based on Charlie. It's interesting, on the comic books, I am not someone who's read all the comic books, and I really should be personally. I think it's my dyslexia that makes me, I wait until the films come out.
Just took a little bit of audio to pull Susan Hayward into the project.
I love the script. It was a complete world when I read the pilot. The way Charlie wrote it, he has very specific songs that are underlying certain scenes. And when I was reading it for the first time, I just pulled out my laptop and looked up the songs on YouTube and played them while I read them. And the whole world just kind of loomed, I felt like, in front of me. And I just felt like, I get the rules here. I get what people are going for. I get their need. There was a sense of real strong need from every character. Which is exciting, because when those needs are at cross purposes, there's a chance for real deep conflict. And not like poo-poo conflict and, oh, is she going to have sex with him or her? Because he's going to have sex and the girl's going to be out of it. That's not interesting to me. So it was like deep deep need from all the characters, a world that isn't always glamorous. You know, we've got this really great metaphor for the superpowers as huge celebrities, and they have endorsement deals, and they've got money, and they've got fans, but it's not always shiny and glittery. So being able to peek underneath that, and not even just peek underneath it, go to the exact opposite of the human depravity. I'm a homicide detective, so I see people at their worst.
So for the part of the world that's not been familiar with the comic, what actually is Powers? Is it a cop show, or is it a superhero show? Brian Bendis comments.
It's not a dead superhero of the week show. That would get crazy old fast. And that one case would then illuminate other things about other parts of things. And so, though we are different and have a different energy, for those looking for that, what is it like, it's closer to that than it is Law and Order. You know, and that kind of long-form storytelling allows complexity, allows character moments for all of them. You're going to see Dina go from something to something. You're going to see Wolf go from something to something, and that's the good stuff.
Powers, the TV series, is available exclusively on the PlayStation Network. You can get more information right now on your PlayStation console or go to PlayStation.com. Never too quiet. Look what's going on right now in the world of pop culture. There's a lot of old and something new again, and it is what everybody's going to be talking about over the weekend and into the next couple of weeks. DC has leaked a couple images that show new costumes for some of their core characters that'll debut in the titles that'll premiere after Convergence. There's a new costume for Superman that throws back a little bit to the Golden Age and at the beginning of New 52 as well. And a new one for Wonder Woman as well. Look for more new costumes to be revealed over the next couple of weeks. And again, they all do debut in DC titles after Convergence, which means they'll be the ones that'll be in comic stores in June. MSNBC is now partnering with Facebook to produce two new daily videos that will appear on Facebook each and every day. The first one is called Sound Off, focusing on breaking news, and will be available every morning. Facepalm appears at the end of the day with more events that covered the news over the past 24-hour cycle. The videos will appear on NBC and on the Now This Facebook pages. When Fox airs the Emmy broadcast coming in September, they're going to put it in the hands of one of their own. Andy Samberg from Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been named as the host of the broadcast. It'll air on Fox on Sunday, September 20th. Sci-Fi has renewed 12 Monkeys for a second season on the network. Viewership has been up since the show debuted a few months back, with an average of about 1.5 million viewers total when everything's all added together. In the meantime, on CBS, there are also some renewals. Both Mom, Mike and Molly, and Two Broke Girls, too, by the way, all renewed for the 2015-2016 TV season. Verizon has signed a multi-year deal with Awesomeness TV, adding some 200 hours of original content through the year. It'll be available only in the U.S. sometime later this year, and among the content will be DreamWorks TV, featuring live action and animated short-form content. The end is coming, at least the season end, for a couple of your favorite series over on the CW. Arrow will air their final episode of the season on Wednesday, May 13th, and a week later, The Flash's first season comes to an end on Tuesday, May 19th. Don't think that this week's release of the new live-action Cinderella is the end of Disney's live-action reboot of some of their classic films. A new one is announced that has a couple of people a little concerned. It is a reboot of Dumbo. And attached to it will be Tim Burton. No announcement yet about a plan to get that in theaters, but more than likely it'll be sometime in 2017. Reed Pop, the people behind C2E2 in Chicago and the New York Comic Con, are expanding their venue into China. The Shanghai Comic Convention will take place from Reed Pop on the 16th and 17th of May. It'll be at the Shanghai Convention Center on those dates. It'll be the first such event ever to be held in the world's largest country.
The Point! The Point!
Actor Nestor Carbonell is back for another season of Bates Motel. So right up front, I was curious as to his comments on how his character has grown over the past couple of seasons.
That's a great question, Mike. He's, first we meet Romero, and he's just sort of a tough, ornery character. He's very prickly and not very likable, and really tough on the Bates family. Over the course of these three seasons, he has somehow come to warm to Norma Bates, and I think she softens him. This year, you'll see quite a bit of that as well, a lot of push-pull. and definitely a growing attraction to her. And that really, I think that's sort of the beginning of his change. Oddly enough, she's the one who affects probably the greatest change on him. That and the fact that the town is turning on him. You will find out very quickly this season that with the implosion of the pod industry that sustained the town, he's not very well liked in town. He was meant to keep the peace, and so that definitely is going to change Romero. But certainly Norma Bates is softening him this year, and that's been a lot of fun to play.
I've heard that this year there are a couple of episodes that give us a little bit more about the man behind the badge. Anything he could tell us on that?
Well, yes, they're talking about specifically an episode that we shot. It was episode 7, so it's a little deeper into the season. But yeah, in that particular episode, we get a little bit of his backstory about sort of what makes him tick, a little bit of his childhood, and that's going to inform a little bit of what, you know, why the guy is. He doesn't smile much. He doesn't suffer fools. He's a bit of a curmudgeon. But he has his own code, and we can get an insight into how all of that sort of may perhaps came to be. And it was a surprise to me. I didn't know what my backstory was going to be until I got the script, but I was pleasantly surprised. It was great.
Big question, though, is the relationship between Norma Bates, played by Vera Farmiga, and Nestor's character. Let's get down to it. What is the attraction there?
Great question. I think they're in a strange way, they're very similar. You know, they're both control freaks. You know, Norma and Sheriff Romero, and you know, they kind of both go by the beat of their own drum. So, and Norma is very quick to step up against anyone who comes between her and her family, and she's extremely protective, and as is Romero of people that he cares for. So I think he admires her. I think he sees her as his female counterpart. So I think there's that element of it. She's also, you know, obviously a charming woman, a beautiful woman. But there is an element of sympathy to her. She's been through a lot. So I think she tugs at his heart in that way as well. But I don't think he pities her. I think he finds her as a formidable foe in a weird way. So I think that's part of why he's drawn to her. And some of it is just inexplicable. You know, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, when you fall for the ones that you go, what, why, and you just don't know why, but there's a sort of, there's chemistry, and so those two perhaps are destined to be together. We're going to find out hopefully this year.
Nestor's last big TV role was Lost, a show that, well, shall we say, left us with a number of questions that to this day are still unanswered. On Bates, though, the characters are headed toward what we know is a very definite ending. And I ask him if, as an actor, does he play that any differently?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's different in the sense that, yeah, we have a sense of what the end is, or what we think the end will be on our show here. But you know, there's a lot of similarities in the way we're working here as we did on Lost. I mean, we don't really get a heads up on what storylines are going to be. On Lost, we certainly never knew. I didn't know my backstory until it was, you know, I got the script the week before I started shooting it, which happened on Lost as well. So I'm enjoying that level of mystery like I did on Lost. But I think you know, these 5 seasons are very carefully mapped out in Carrie, Aaron's, and Carlton's minds. And, you know, even though in Lost, they knew where they wanted to end. I think there was more give and more play within each season than there was necessarily on this one. And here we're only doing 10 episodes a season as well, so it's a lot easier, I guess, to control the story, you know, and the arcs. But no, it's you know, it's a psychological thriller, so. So we are not—we're kept in the dark about all the twists and turns that are coming, because those are sort of the secrets, and like it was on Lost as well, and it's similar also in the sense that it was Lost was very much a character-driven show. It was every episode was devoted to somebody's backstory or flash sideways, and this show is absolutely all of that. It's very much in this season in particular, all about character development and the plot coming through the character, as opposed to just a plot-driven show.
So with an acting resume like Nestor's, I had to know, were there any good parts that got away? Anything that he passed on that, well, now he regrets just a little bit?
It's really funny you just mentioned that, because I was just talking about this with Freddie Highmore, and my wife were driving past Paramount, and we're saying, oh, you guys are so close to Paramount. Have you ever worked there? And my wife and I looked at each other, and I wasn't offered the show, but I was offered a screen test for the Julian McMahon role in Nip Tuck. And it was, at a time, it was written as a Cuban plastic surgeon. And it was, I was debating on whether, and I loved the script, but I was, it was the beginning of pilot season, and there was a few other pilots coming down the pike that I had my eye on. And I ultimately ended up not screen, you know, I met with him, but I didn't end up taking the screen test. And sure enough, that show was a fantastic hit, a monster hit. And the show I ended up taking only went 9 episodes. So we often think about that show, but no. Had I done that show, I wouldn't have gotten a loss. So I always, I have no regrets, but yeah, that one is definitely one we still talk about.
Mr. Carbonell in the new season of Bates Motel. Catch up right now at AETV.com. And new episodes air every Monday on A&E. That's it for right now, but in the meantime, Undateable, the little comedy that could, is back on NBC, and we celebrate in a couple of days with comedian Ron Funches and creator Bill Lawrence. All that exclusively on websites like ComicMix.com, MichaelDavisWorld.com, GetThePointRadio.com, and in the iTunes podcast directory as well. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook under The Point Radio, and then be right back here in a few days. Get the